Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. If you think I'm sounding chipper, then you're absolutely right. I am a little bit chipper because, A, we've got the longest day behind us, which is great. It's a long, smooth descent into Christmas now, fantastic. And B, I've just found something that Kieran's not very good at, and that's geography. Kieran's just explained to me how he was meant to book a holiday in Tenerife, but accidentally went to the Cape Verde Islands instead, which, I'm sorry, because that just made me laugh a lot. But it's also a little insight into what we talk about before we start recording. How did you manage that? Why have you not got a geography spreadsheet?
No, I haven't. I was taking instructions from the Baroness, so therefore, you know, it was in one ear, straight out the other. And she says, right, I've given you the instructions, just go ahead and do it. And she'd given me the name of somewhere, and I thought it began with a C, and I ended up in Cape Verde, but we were supposed to, it was the name of some village in the Balearics or something like that. It was vaguely in the right direction, except a lot further.
Yeah. A lot of that, considerably further, Kieran. Yeah. And how long were you there for?
We were there for about 10 days.
Oh, I bet it felt longer, didn't it?
Yeah, there's not a lot happening in Cape Verde.
I imagine it's the most exciting thing that's happened here for ages is the bloke from The Price of Football arriving on the wrong island. Shall we crack on? It's Newsday, Kieran, and we do have some proper news stories to get through. The first one, I'm afraid, is Derby County. Again, we managed to get through two whole pods without mentioning Derby, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was good news. And the administrators, Kieran, have publicly admitted that they're looking for a short-term loan to pay the staff wages for June. Is this standard practice for an administrator, Kieran, to actually ask for money?
Well, you don't normally do it publicly.
Right.
You know, the first thing you do once you are appointed as administrators is that you work out how much money you've got and how long you've got to carry on the business. And normally you will have negotiations, you know, perhaps with the bank who's close to the appointment, with a review to providing finance, you know, selling it on the basis of if you can sell the company as a going concern, it's worth a lot more than if the company is liquidated. So yeah. There is a genuine business reason for this. But you know, we are now into month 9 of the administration, and we've seen on regular occasions Quantamar, the administrator, saying, we're nearly there, nearly there. You know, a sale is imminent. You know, that has been proven to be a false promise. Well, not you know, and I'm not necessarily saying that they are they should be held wholly responsible for this, because they shouldn't. But they did arrange a loan with MSD Holdings, which gave them sufficient funding to see Derby County through until the end of the most recent season. And that kept the EFL happy, because that meant that it was integrity in terms of the competition, yeah. In terms of the championship. So that was good. They said they could have had more player sales and made more people redundant, but they felt that in doing so, it would compromise their attempts to avoid relegation, which is an interesting viewpoint, because if you've had a 21 point deduction,
yeah,
relegation is a fair chance. And then we came to May. Chris Kirchner said, I'm taking on responsibility for the costs after the end of the final match of the season, the 7th of May. And then somebody else paid the wages in May, and that's never been publicly disclosed, but we know who it is, and most journalists we speak to know it is. I understand that that person is now trying to get that money back from Chris Kirchner, and to which my response is, well, good luck with that. I wish you all the best, because he's a person that has certainly gone to ground as far as social media is concerned. That the best thing to do is to go to a golf course, and the chances are he'll be wandering around there with an inane grin, trying to get a selfie with a player. So we now have the issue of the June wages, which are due in the next 7 days. The wage bill is estimated to be around about £1.8 million. So clearly a substantial amount of money to find. Yeah. There has been talk about the Appleby Group potentially advancing that money. They are one of the interested parties. We know the other is the Mike Ashley Group. We've not heard anything from them, but that's the way that they tend to operate, apart from the fact that there is potential litigation taking place, and we'll come back to that litigation issue a bit later. So how the June wage bill is going to be paid. And once we get past the June wage bill, the wage bill does substantially drop because players' contracts expire. Yeah. And there are people, Derby fans might be saying, well, I'm surprised that some players are still there. But my understanding is that, some players might have substantial bonuses which are due to them if they stay until the 30th of June. So there's lots of rumour and counter-rumour and conspiracy theories. But for the first time, I would say I'm getting a bit too twitchy in respect of Derby. I've been confident all the way through that there will be a solution to this, and that is still my broad view. But it is dragging on far too long, and I think we need to separate the football issues from the finance issues here. You can't have a football club unless we have that funding sorted out in the course of the next 7 days. I think the EFL are trying to get as involved as they can, but one of the things which has come to pass that they are not being allowed to do so because there are confidentiality agreements between the interested parties and Quantum R, which seems to suit everybody apart from the EFL and the future of Derby County, in my view. So it's a frustration, and we just want to get this thing. We just want to get this thing to put to bed and to allow Derby fans to, to talk about something other than who's going to be owning the club. Will we have a club? And focus on the usual crap that we talk about over the summer. Who are we signing? Who are we letting go? And so on.
Yeah. Forgive me, Kieran. There's a couple of questions off the back of that. And it is all rather worrying, isn't it? First of all, you sounded very confident that you know who the mysterious source was who paid the wages in May. Are you able to reveal who that is and why they haven't done it in June? And secondly, does the fact that Quantum R, the administrators, are publicly asking for a loan indicate that the Appleby Group and Ashley aren't interested in buying the club, because surely they would be the first people Quantum R would have gone to get that money?
Yeah, I'll answer those questions in turn. I don't think it's appropriate for me to say who paid the wages.
Okay, fair enough.
It was paid by somebody who had the decency to do so.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they didn't have to, so fair play to them. So if they want to keep it quiet, I'll tell you after the show.
Yeah.
With regards to the administrators, it is certainly an unusual approach to take, because the minute you go around handing out a begging bowl, the person lending the money to you is going to try to leverage on that to try to get some benefits. So it's not a great position that Quantum R find themselves in. I've not been there praising them significantly over the course of the administration. I think at times they have let themselves down with the lack of communication. And to say that the lack of communication is part of a grand master plan by them, well, that's come back to bite them on the bum now. So I think the Appleby Group and the Ashley Group are still interested. What we're also seeing in the latest press release from Quantum R is an admission that the price paid by potential owners may be insufficient to avoid the 15-point penalty for coming out of administration. And that might be indicative. And that wasn't the case with Chris Kirchner. Chris Kirchner, you know, he appeared to be saying all the way through, yeah, well, I'm going to give enough money so that over the 3 years, we'll pay the 35%, we'll avoid the 15-point penalty. But at the end of the day, yeah, he was talking out of his arse. He didn't come up with the money. That broadly ties in with my gut feeling was that, you know, why would you be paying more than 20 million quid for a football club if you're not getting the stadium or you're having to pay an extra 20 million pounds, 25 million pounds on top of that with the stadium, because you're not actually buying very much.
Yeah.
So this would suggest that perhaps that's also the view taken by the potential bidders. And they are willing to take that 15-point penalty hit, which is, well, first of all, it's a shame for Derby County fans, but it's not insurmountable because they can. I'm still firmly of the belief that you can get into the playoffs with a 15-point penalty. Yeah. But secondly, yeah, there are unsecured creditors. There are people who supplied to Mel Morris's Derby County in good faith goods and services. Many of those people are local. Without wanting to sound too much of a conspiracy theorist, and this is, and this probably does make me sound like I'm wearing a tinfoil hat. Remember, I was contacted by Derby County about 2 weeks before the club went into administration and offered consultancy work. Yeah. Now, that would have meant two things. First of all, I would have signed an NDA, so I wouldn't be able to comment. And secondly, I wouldn't have been paid. So I had the worst of both worlds. So I wouldn't be able to say anything about the fact that I wasn't being paid, and I wouldn't be able to comment over the course of the administration. Now, yeah, I know from my own experience, before an administrator is appointed, normally the administrators will be doing some discreet work. And if you take a look at Quantum R's fees, you know, they clearly had some involvement. So, I don't want to sound, I've changed my name to Grassy Nollington or something like that. I'm now thinking, what was this sort of, as part of the plan to keep people who do open their mouth quiet, this would have achieved it. Because there are noticeably other parties who have been very silent with regard to criticism of Mel Morris, such as the local council. Mel Morris is still an ambassador for Derby County business, but of course they can't say anything against him because they still need him to sell the ground to somebody who will rent it out to the new owner. So he does appear to still be very much in the box seat with regards to this, and that's a disappointment because I don't think he's conducted himself in a manner that somebody who claims to be a lifelong Derby County should do.
Yeah, tinfoil helmet or not, Kieran, we know from experience that you normally find ways around not talking about people you're not supposed to talk about, as Lawrence Bassini's friends and family will probably testify. But I've never known, I know we've only been doing this 2.5 years, Kieran, but I've not known a story like this where everything you say raises more questions. And what you've just said raises two more questions for me. Firstly, how much would it take a new owner to buy the club for to avoid a 15-point penalty? And secondly, if they do find a kindly benefactor to pay the wages for June, to lend them the money, does that mean that if Appleby and Ashley take over the club, they will then have to pay that £1.8 million back to that person?
Well, to answer the second question first, not necessarily. Because the new owners will be buying the assets of Derby County. They will not inherit any of the old liabilities. Right.
Yeah, okay.
So any benefactor would have to say, well, you know, why am I doing this and what is in it for me? Because we are talking a large sum of money.
So it's a donation. It's going to be a donation, not a loan in, isn't it?
Well, yes, unless as part of the ongoing negotiations, the Appleby or Ashley Group say, well, if this person does do this, we will look after them after the deal. But they're under, but the deal's not over the line. And, right. And things are certainly dragging on. That's the second question. With regards to the first question, realistically, I think you're talking an overall price for Stadium to get MSD paid off and the unsecureds and everything. You're not going to get any change out of the best part of 40 million quid to include the fees of the administrators and so on.
Wow.
And that's assuming that HMRC are willing to take a 75% discount right. on what's owed to them. And they might be a bit arsy about that because they'll say, well, yeah, MSD Holdings have got 100% and they're charging interest on the loans. Football creditors are getting 100%. Mel Morris is not having to pay anything in terms of his personal guarantees. And we, on behalf of the taxpayer, have been expected to effectively subsidise this deal when we've got a legal entitlement to more money. So it's going to be a very delicate position. But you put all the sums together, Stadium plus the secured creditors, plus the administrators' fees, and also the professional people they've employed, and there's not a lot of change out of 40, perhaps 45 million for a League One club.
Yeah,
with five players.
Yeah,
or seven. I think they got now.
Yeah, one of them is on the way to Palace, apparently. Kieran, this is arguably the most spurious link I've ever done. But Bonnie Prince Charlie and his Jacobite army reached as far as Derby.
Did they?
Yes, they did, before deciding to turn around and go back to Scotland and their ultimate demise at Culloden. And we are travelling from Derby to Scotland, Kieran. That's a link that I think Lucy Worsley herself would have been proud of there. Or that Scottish,
oft.
That Scottish bloke with the long hair who walks along cliffs talking about history, Neil Oliver. But and this is an odd story, Kieran, and I know you've spoken to people about this, but the SPFL have agreed a new title sponsorship deal with Cinch, but it doesn't include one of the biggest clubs in the SPFL.
Yes, so this was a deal that was put to clubs in the SPFL around about a year ago. So Cinch are a car online company. They spend a lot of money on advertising. They're involved in advertising with sponsoring the England cricket team
and Palace.
They've been sponsoring Villa, Palace. They're quite high profile. I think they're linked to We Buy Any Car as well. Yeah, We Buy Any Car buys them and Cinch sells them. So I might be wrong on it. I'm not great on cars or geography, as we both know. So this was put to a vote by Scottish clubs, and by all accounts, there was an overwhelming response. And this was around about 12 months ago that the deal would go ahead. So Cinch became sort of their logos were on, when footballers and managers stand in front of those, polythene advertising hoardings things. Except Rangers subsequently said, well, hold on, one of our directors who is also involved in sponsoring Rangers Football Club, Douglas Park, he's involved in car sales, and we don't want to have anything to do with Cinch because we think there'll be a conflict.
Yeah.
And this has been dragging on for some time. And if you take a look at the SPFL constitution, it does appear that if you have a pre-existing relationship with a sponsor and there is a conflict, then you don't have to buy into this. So it's now come to – so Rangers have been refusing to have anything to do with Cinch. They've also been pointing the finger at the SPFL senior management. They're not very happy with them. And there are, there are historic issues going along to what happened with, Rangers' demise and relegation and being put in League Three and so on. So there's clearly some bad blood. But it now has come through because all the other clubs are in favour of the deal, but Rangers and Rangers aren't because of what they perceive as a conflict of interest. So it now appears that the deal is going to continue as far as the SPFL are concerned, and Rangers will be formally told that you don't have to comply with it, and on top of that. That the value of the deal, because let's face it, Rangers are a huge player in Scottish football. They get a lot of TV exposure. They get a lot of exposure in the press and so on.
Yeah.
The value of the deal is broadly the same without Rangers, as it was. And it looks as if Rangers might even get a share of the deal as well, even though they're not going to get involved. So yeah, you could argue that all parties have come out of this with, you know, a degree of positivity. SPFL clubs continue to get money from Cinch. Cinch have actually got an awful lot of exposure on the back of this. And Rangers feel that the points which they've raised have been noted. They also believe, as do some of the other clubs, that perhaps the value of Scottish TV rights have been undersold by the SPFL. Now, I've spoken to some people in broadcasting and said, I've had a look, compare Scottish rights to Danish rights, Norwegian rights, and so on. And the response I've had is, well, we're not prepared to pay more, and we don't know anybody else that's prepared to pay more. So it's all very well saying the rights are undersold. And we've also we had this a few years ago with the EFL as well. The likes of Leeds and Derby were saying that the EFL had undersold the sale of rights. But again, there's not that many broadcasters around. And when you do speak to them, they say, well, we've got the Premier League. And that focuses, people have got a limited amount of time that they're willing to watch football over a weekend. And for you and I, thanks to both having wonderful and extremely tolerant wives, that number of minutes is actually quite high. But, squeezing in extra matches in Scotland, especially if it's not, let's be honest, if it's not Rangers or Celtic, what are the viewing figures? They tend to be very low. Then the perception of the market is, and the broadcasters we speak to, is the Scottish deal isn't a big deal, but nobody else is prepared to pay more.
Ali's very philosophical about the amount of football I watch, because I think she considers every minute I'm watching football to be a minute I'm not bothering her with jokes and impressions and attention seeking. Interesting you say that the other teams are happy with Rangers' approach, even though Rangers, you say, are getting money out of the deal. Wouldn't the other teams be happier if the Rangers' money was shared amongst them? Because you think, okay, fine, if Rangers don't want to be part of the deal, why are they still getting money from it?
Well, yeah, if you ask any person, would you rather have more money or less, they're going to say more. But yeah. I think they will have taken legal counsel, and it's the deal is carrying on. So the fact that Cinch are willing to go along, I think that's more a relief for those Scottish clubs, because now they've got guaranteed revenues over the remainder of the deal. So I think they've said, why get into an argument with Rangers over this, because there's bigger fish to fry.
And Cinch must have a fair bit of money, Kira, because like we say, they're sponsoring the SPFL, they're sponsoring the England cricket team, they're sponsoring Palace. Ryland won't come cheap for the adverts. So they're clearly doing well for themselves, aren't they? But we're talking about them, so it's working, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Chelsea is in a much calmer place than it was a month ago, but there have been some fairly significant senior management changes there, Kieran, haven't there?
Yes. So what we've seen is Bruce Buck. He has left his position at Chelsea. He's been there 15, 16 years. Marina Gravinskaya, it looks like she's leaving, and I think people expected her to say she's a very highly thought of executive. Yeah. But I think it was, if we believe what we read in the press, she will have made somewhere in the region of 30 to 50 million from the deal to sell the club to the Bowley Group. And Todd Bowley, who sort of has been sort of the front of house as far as the deal is concerned, even though I think 60% of the money is coming from Clear Lake Capital, it looks as if he's now going to be the chairman of Chelsea. So he will be taking more of a front role, a much more dynamic role. And it's been interesting, some of the stuff that he's been coming out in saying. And now this could be a classic case of managing expectations. But he's saying, well, because of FFP, we can't necessarily spend as much money as we would have wanted. It looks like Lukaku is going out on loan. £97 million for him. That could be a hit to the accounts for some of the loss of there. But what was also interesting from my perspective was one of the things he said is football is undersold. I think we've mentioned that American potential owners are genuinely of the belief that football's got still a lot of growth potential. He said, if you take a look at the NFL, the NFL's got 170 million fans. And look at the money that the NFL generates from TV revenues. You compare that to football globally, and football is a far bigger global fan base than the NFL, and yet the Premier League's bringing in less money. So he's clearly of the view that there is a way of monetizing football to a greater extent. But my view is, if you take a look at an NFL game, you normally get between, I think it is it 10 to 12 minutes of actual sport taking place? And the rest of it is all stops, and all of those stops feature adverts. Whereas football, you do have 45 minutes, then you've got a 15-minute break, and you've got, you've got the pundits talking for a few of those minutes, and then you've got another 45 minutes of sport. So, unless he's thinking that, football should be split into quarters, and I know that was a proposal by some people, which possibly would get you almost as angry as you are with Arsene Wenger and his kick-in proposals. I don't want to poke the bear.
Let's not pull at that, Fred. Right. That really would be the day. If we start going four quarters, that's the day the season ticket goes back. At the end of the season, obviously. But,
of course.
Yeah.
In four parts, presumably. In four.
This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. What if you had access to tomorrow's tools today? In Notion, you do. It's the AI-powered workspace where any team can turn ideas into action.
My career is sort of a bit like being a butterfly, and I'm always jumping from project to project. So therefore, Notion helps me from summarizing meetings notes and automatically generating action items, to getting answers to any question in seconds. If you can think it, you can make it. And Notion is for everyone, whether you're a Fortune 500 company or a freelance football finance lecturer.
You can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
John Textor, US businessman and major shareholder at my club, Crystal Palace, is close to reaching an agreement to buy a significant stake in Olympique Lyonnais. I believe the fourth club he will have money in if he does. It's led a lot of Palace fans on the social media to suggest that perhaps he invests a bit more of his money in us rather than spending it all and buying new clubs. But I think that's partly because a lot of Palace fans went out and bought Botafogo shirts and now think they've got to go out and buy Olympique Lyonnais shirts as well. But it's an interesting – he's clearly expanding his portfolio, Kieran, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And I think it's interesting if we take a look at some of the comments that he's come out with regards to the multi-club model. And he sees these investments as being quite independent of one another. Whereas if we take a look at some of the other multi-club models, so that the people that own Barnsley and some other clubs, the Matthew Benham at Brentford, and he's also got a Danish club,
yeah,
and so on, they tend to have reasonably close links in terms of sponsors, kit manufacturers, and so on. I think, yeah, the classic case for that would be the City Football Group, because I was watching somebody yesterday. I thought, blimey, I don't recognise him, and it looked as if it was a Manchester City player. It had Etihad Airways on the front of the shirt, and it was light blue. And then only that I realised that it was actually another club in a completely different country, but
yeah,
happened to be owned by the City Football Group. So it looks as if Textor is going to try to keep these clubs independent of each other, and he just believes, going back to what we've been saying in respect to Todd Bowley, that there is undervalue in football. He's a wealthy individual, and he's going to, buy into clubs with a view to, generating that value and leveraging on the back of it.
Hmm. He seems an interesting chap, and I have to say he sells himself very well as a blue collar working class, background operative. I'm fairly sure I told you that while we were doing the Marathon March last season, he gave FYP, the Palace podcast, we were walking with a $10,000 donation halfway round.
Wow. Fair play to him.
Yeah, we did work out it was 3 a.m. in Florida, so perhaps he'd been in a casino, we don't know. But still, he sent it with a message saying that, the community and the working class community is very important to him. So he certainly talks a good fight, but I think the reason Palace fans are so interested in this is because there's constant speculation about him buying out Harris and Blitzer, who are our major shareholders. And it seems that the more money he spends on buying other clubs, it makes it less likely that he's likely to become the major or the sole owner of Crystal Palace.
I wouldn't necessarily subscribe to that, because if his wealth is as it is estimated to be, he can afford to do both. He can afford to. So I wouldn't be worried about that. I think it's a business decision on his behalf, and we don't know how much Harris and Blitzer are asking for their shares. It could be more of a negotiation issue than anything else. I don't see the amount of money ultimately being an issue in terms of can he afford it. It's whether or not he thinks that there is value in the price that's being asked.
Have you just backhandedly insulted Palace here, Kieran, by inferring that we're a cheap club? Oh, no, implying. No. I infer, you imply. Oh, my God, my father-in-law would be so upset at hearing that. this is a name we haven't heard for a while, Kieran, Mike Ashley. He's probably for the best, but he's cropped up this week with an interesting claim. I don't know why he's come public on this, Kieran, but he claims that he held talks with Newcastle's new owners about retaining shares or a stake in the club.
Yes, this was as part of the long-winded acquisition of Newcastle United by PIF. But he is saying now that there were discussions, and we don't know how far they got with regards to PIF, that he would retain a stake. He did take back £17.5 million of a loan to the club before the takeover took place. So it could be that originally he was going to not repay any of that loan and perhaps keep, probably 5% or something, just for whatever the reasons were. At the same time, he is, we know that there is litigation potentially between Mike Ashley and the administrators of Derby County. There appears to be ongoing litigation between Mike Ashley and Amanda Staveley. He lent her part of the consortium some money, and that was on the proviso that once the takeover did take place, that there was no criticism of Mike Ashley. Oh. And I think Amanda Staveley said something along the lines of, we're looking to take down, we're looking forward to taking down the Sports Direct advertising. Now, that to me isn't criticism, and that's going to perform part of their defence. It was simply a case of, it has been closely linked, Sports Direct, to Mike Ashley. There's a new team in. We've managed to sell those advertising rights and so on. But things do seem, you know, for a man that you get the impression is very thick-skinned, because his popularity in Newcastle is not great, but that seems to not bother him at all. But a relatively, I think, an ambiguous comment at worst has resulted in more litigation. And if I'm a silver-tongued friend of Mike Ashley, I'd be saying, well, perhaps you have got a case here. But it's a strange thing for him to come out with, because he is normally very silent. Trying to get words out of Mike Ashley is quite a challenge.
Yeah, to the extent that it makes you wonder whether there's an ulterior motive. Is it standard practice, Kieran, in business that you would lend somebody money on the basis that they don't then criticise you afterwards? Or is that something that's unique?
Everything's unique, I think, when it comes to football. Now there is a case for saying, because a standard business practice is that when you've got new owners in, they... And anything to do with bad news, and let's face it, we've only got to look at government to do this. Any bad news that they've got in the first 12 months is firmly put, blamed on their predecessors. And any good news they claim for themselves. So, this could be something similar here. So this was what he didn't want. He Mike Ashley feels that over the 14-year period of which he was the owner of Newcastle United, he ran a stable ship, and financially he did, and that he feels that he has been demonised unreasonably and unfairly. My view all along is that from a business sustainability point of view, he did run Newcastle as a solid organisation. But that, we're fans, we're not interested in that. Any fan that says, "Oh yes, I want sustainability above glory," is probably telling you what they think you want to hear. But actually, we all want to see new signings. We want to see victories. We want to see cup runs. We want to see attempts to get into Europe and so on. And that's the nature of being a football fan. He's certainly not the best owner in football. I also think he's far from the worst as well. He's just there was just a bad relationship between him and the Newcastle fan base.
Yeah, and I think if you're a Derby fan at the moment, you would happily take him as your new owner if it was to happen tomorrow. Yeah. Gary Neville isn't happy. Oh, there's a second part of that. Gary Neville isn't happy with Manchester United's chief finance officer. Why is that, Kieran?
Well, the chief finance officer, a gentleman called Cliff Beatty or Batty, I'm not quite sure. It's only got one T, so that's a dilemma. So Cliff Beatty, I think I'm going to go for. We know that following the demise of Super League, some of the clubs in Europe, in fact, quite a lot of the clubs in Europe, are saying to UEFA, we need to revisit how UEFA money is split between clubs. Right. And presently, under the UEFA distribution model, 30% of Champions League money, for example, is allocated on what is known as a 10-year coefficient, which effectively it ranks all of the 32, soon to be 36 clubs in the Champions League on the number of victories, the progress that they've made in European competition over the last 10 years. So therefore, for a club like Manchester United, even though it's won the Europa League, hasn't it, once during that period, it's still qualified for the Champions League. It's got to the quarterfinals or the last 16 on a regular basis. It actually has quite a high 10-year coefficient. Cliff Beatty says, well, we don't think we should lose this because we have the certainty of revenue. So it's the equivalent of parachute payments, but not parachute payments. And then he came out with this comment, which I think is textbook Glazer style comment. We all know where the value is created. Let's not kid ourselves. And let's not kid ourselves either. Yeah, Manchester United is a huge football club with a huge fan base. Nobody's denying that. And also, you know, if we look at our clubs, we don't expect our football clubs to generate as much money as Manchester United, because Palace and Brighton are not as big as United. So what he's concerned about is the additional money from, if United have two or three bad seasons, they still get more than clubs from, say, Portugal or the Netherlands, who might get to, say, the semi-finals of the Champions League, and United get knocked out in the last 16, because United have this parachute of money from the last 10 years. So you know, it's what appears to be is he's effectively saying that football is better off if the big clubs have more of the cake. Right. And I think this is a classic case of trickle down economics. And we saw this with both Project Big Picture, of which Manchester United were significant authors, and Super League, that if the rich people get more money, then everybody benefits. And we refer to that as trickle down economics. And trickle down economics says that the supporters of trickle down economics say, if the rich get more, then they're in a position to give more to those who are less rich. Now, as somebody that does have a background in economics, this is how trickle down economics actually works. The rich get more, full stop. And anybody that falls for that, the spiel is in my view having the wool pulled over their eyes.
Yeah, I think anybody who was an adult between 1979 and 1991 realized that trickle down economics doesn't always trickle down. Who was the Man United executive who seemed to spend most of the weekend in the pub telling fans that they pissed loads of money up against the wall in the last 10 years?
Yeah, that's the new chief exec. That's Arnold. So some Manchester United fans, it's these people they live in very, very nice places because he's very well remunerated, and I'm not going to criticise Manchester United for that. That's up for them to make those decisions. So it looked as if a bunch of unhappy United fans were planning on paying him a visit at home. I don't, I'm a big believer in non-violent direct action.
Absolutely.
I don't feel particularly comfortable with that type of thing, because ultimately, he's a bloke who's got a family living there as well, and having a bunch of Herberts at the gate, sort of perhaps not in the best of moods, could be a bit frightening for the family. So he got wind of this and he agreed to meet them down the pub, and he did come out and say some things which wouldn't necessarily fall particularly fulsome of praise in respect of the Glazers with regards to Manchester United have spent an awful lot of money in the transfer market. They've also generated far less money in the transfer market from player sales than their peer group, the likes of Chelsea. I did some calculations for somebody, and I think over the last 10 years, United have had player sales of about 170 million, of which half of that was Lukaku, whereas Liverpool have generated close to 400 million, Chelsea have generated 500 million, City have generated 300 million, and so on. So United have not been good in the player trading market. So I think he's earned a few brownie points among some Manchester United fans. I think he used language which was industrial, which is fine. Again, off air, we have been known to say the os blasphemous thing. It's fair to say. So I've no issue with that. Gary Neville says Manchester United board should concentrate on better distribution and the wider interests of the game. That came from neither Cliff Beatty or Arnold. Also, I've heard some other things which he said, which don't present him in a particularly good light. But again, not for this show.
Ah, well, that makes me even more determined to get him on as a guest for this pod. But we have to do it about 10:30 at night in a pub, where we've given him a couple of pints of lager, and we record it on a phone, and he doesn't know we're doing it. Lincoln City, Kieran, are a team that have always been on your good step, where fans of Lincoln City. But investors have put money into the club just a days ago for the 10th time in the last 12 months. Why is that, Kieran, and is it healthy?
It's healthy in the sense that Lincoln City, like most of the clubs in the EFL, are running at a loss. The shareholders have put in around about 600 grand last month. And we've also seen Preston North End. We spoke about the sad loss of Trevor Hemmings, but his family have continued to support Preston. They've just put in 1.8 million today. And the good thing about putting money into a club this way is that you put it in as and when needed, but it's not being put in the form of a loan. So therefore, there's no obligation to have to repay this money at a later date. So, certainly fair play to Lincoln. I think that their ownership model and structure and the governance and the transparency at the club is of a standard which other clubs should try to subscribe, because if you think about what happened when we went to Accrington Stanley, Andy Holt will talk to anybody. He doesn't hold himself up in ivory towers, and he speaks to fans, and he is completely frank and honest with them, and they respect him, and they respect the club for that. I think the same is true at Lincoln. And if you want to get fans on board, treat them as adults, explain things, and don't use press releases and management speak. Just be honest with people, and it's amazing the response that you will get.
Yeah. Speaking of going to Accrington, Kieran, we weren't going to mention this, but we are hoping to announce within the next couple of weeks the location for our next tour date. And we're not giving much away, but we're hoping that it will be in the West Country, the Far West. But we will let you know more details about that as soon as we have them. It will be very late summer, early autumn, and we can't wait. We're hoping to do even more in the new year because we really enjoy it. Penultimate story, Kieran, is a big one that didn't really make the ripples I thought it would do. Samuel Eto'o, who was one of the best players in the world for a time, has pleaded guilty to a £3.2 million tax fraud relating to his image rights while playing for Barcelona. We've talked before, Kieran, rather you have talked about the ways of using image rights to pay players and maybe to get around various things, but that's a huge amount of money that he's admitted to, isn't it?
Yes, I mean it's a tax. It's paying the tax and playing penalties on top. Samuel Eto'o at one point was the highest paid player in the world when he ended up playing in Russia.
Ironically. Of course, we mentioned last week. Yeah.
We did. Yes.
Yeah.
His defense is, I'm a football player. I'm not involved with things, and I trust my agent implicitly. He's always been a father figure to me, and if he says sign this document, I sign this document.
Yeah.
And I do feel a degree of sympathy towards that, because if you are not a professional in these areas, then if I want pensions advice, I go to a pensions advisor. If I want mortgage advice, I go to a mortgage advisor. Well, in terms of his image rights, if his manager says, we've arranged this for you, sign here, he has done that. But he's admitted that, ultimately, it is his responsibility. It looks like he's going to pay that money across in good faith. Under Spanish law, I think he gets a suspended sentence as well, but provided you have not been previously imprisoned under Spanish law, for these type of offences, you don't end up in the clink. You don't end up like Boris Becker, for example.
Right, okay. And finally, Kieran, a new study has found that Brambu is the best run club in Europe. Some of our listeners may prefer me to call it Bromby, but I've spent most of the day trying to find out how you actually pronounce it. And Brambu, I even texted Sandy Toksvig, who said, how did you get my number? but I'm going with Brambu. The best run club in Europe, apparently, Kieran. So what lessons can we all learn from that?
Yeah, well, this is research done by Off the Pitch, who are a Scandinavian sort of analytics firm.
Yeah, yeah.
They put out a regular document, and I've written for them in the past. I know the guys. They're very, very enthusiastic about what they do. And it is sort of a measure of wage control and profitability. I think there are a couple of Scottish clubs in the top 10 who are neither Rangers nor Celtic, which has provoked one or two articles in the Scottish press. Fair play to Brandbu because they live within their means. And we use a profit measure called EBITDA, which is a sort of a cash proxy for profit, and you compare that to revenue as well, and they've done extremely well, so fair play to them. Other metrics are available, so I'm always a bit loath to say we should use one criteria upon which to make any overall judgment of a club, but this does appear that I think Scottish football and Scandinavian football, I've given Scottish football a lot of praise since we started this show, they are very good at living within their means and not gambling the future of the club and taking a sustainable approach.
Any English clubs in the top 10?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay.
Too busy chasing the dream.
Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to join them and make a small monthly contribution to the pod, then thank you very much. That'd be very kind of you. Go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And Monday is the day for our question of the show. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, folks, thank you so much for the engagement and the support. It does keep us on our toes, and we genuinely appreciate your contributions. You can support us at Patreon for as little as £1 a month. But there are other ways of showing your love and giving us some positive vibes. And that's to go onto your app from which you download your podcast. And you can give us a review. And if you can give us 5 stars, if you think we're worth it, we're not asking you to do that if you don't. It helps us in the charts. It helps our credibility when we are trying to get guests on the show and so on. And by all accounts, it doesn't matter what you actually say in the review. You could say you would rather have the show presented by Alan Wicker and Chris Eubank. And it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference to us. Honest.
I met one of those chaps. It wasn't Alan Wicker. I remember working on They Think It's All Over a long time ago when Chris Eubank was a guest, and he arrived wearing the most wonderful three-piece check suit, which was fine, and a monocle, which was fine, but he was also on a skateboard, which was less fine because the office was at the bottom of the stairs. And he basically went around. There's about 8 of us in the room, including Gary Lucan, and said, how many children do you have? Yeah, 1, 2. And he came to me and said, how many children do you have? I said, 1. He said, boy or a girl? I said, boy. And he said, you are the only heterosexual in the room. And we asked him to explain what may, and he wouldn't explain. He was the most fascinating. And then the next time we met him, he was living in a front of a lorry in Brighton, just down the road from you. I very much like the tweet we had, who said, I've sent you a 5-star review and I've suggested that it be presented by Random Presenter 1 and Random Presenter 2.
Yes.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.